Today's in Kevin Young, the Oregon Department of Lands and Conservation.
Yeah, you can unmute.
Okay, you're unmuted.
All right, let's do a roll call, Sue. You here?
I think I am.
Richard's in here?
Yeah, Richard's.
Sean, so what we do is you say your last name and then you say here.
Okay, Freilinger here.
Hodgkin's here.
Moore here.
Carl here.
All right. So public comment. Anyone wishing to speak? Now's the time. I guess we'll go by the order on the list. Huh. You have that. You look at that. It may just be Chuck.
Oh, no, are you speaking first?
No, I am. That's if they choose.
Yeah, you're up first.
All right, we've got two yeses. First, Robert Davis. All right, Robert.
Yes, sir, Mr. Moore. Good to see you and the council and the newbie Sean. Yeah. So I hear you're getting sworn in tonight, so you got to do the I do. But I represent Yamhill Neighborhood Association, and with that, I would like to bring to this Planning Commission's attention something that has been discussed previously and hasn't really taken effect yet. Basically, it needs to, in our opinion, because of the growing pains that Yamhill is suffering and is about to enter into with this new proposed gas station. And with that said, YNA would like to see that there is a volunteer committee of several people that would represent the city of Yamhill for economic development. And by that, I'm talking about looking into new businesses. I'm talking about keeping the same look and feel that our stagecoach town of many years. You know, Yamhill used to be the only stage stop between Portland and the coast. We had at one time 5 hotels. 38,000 people used to be in this city at one time, way back in the late 1800s. So where are we now? We're a little, almost know nothing community of 12 to 1300 souls struggling to make things happen here. We don't have much money and we have lots of issues facing us with regards to water and sewer, and the fact that we have 57 homes about to come online. So with that said, I recommend to this council that you guys find some volunteers, and if you can't, I will, or YNA will help you with that. And we'll put together an economic group that will get to know the businesses, get to know our city's needs, find a niche that we need. We don't need to be a Carlton. We don't need to have a bunch of wineries here. That's not us. I've already heard that 25 years ago. But we do need a niche. We do need something to bring people to our city and businesses of good value to our city. So many businesses have failed because they weren't, one, supported by the residents, two, they weren't enough to bring in outside people to visit our small community. So it's going to take a bunch of out-of-the-box thinkers in this economic development committee to think of what the city of Yamhill needs and to work with the Planning Commission, speaking in their ear and saying, this is what we found, this is what we need, this is where we're going, what do you think? And that's all I have. Thank you very much for hearing me, Mr. Moore.
Yeah, Robert, thank you. Hey, well, you know, one thing about hourglasses, you can't reset them. You can't, like,
Dump it all and start over. We have to wait until.
All right. Anyway, you know, Doug, it's so fun. We're going to talk about history of land use development here. We go try to go forward in the future. And I've got a letter here from was this from back in 2000, year 2000, James B. Knight, Rural and Community Services Division, to the Honorable Chuck Mitchell, Jr. So I guess you're not mayor anymore. Are you still honorable?
All right. You get 5 minutes.
Okay. You got 5 minutes here. Chuck Mitchell, 760 East 6th Street, Amhill, Oregon. Here tonight to talk to the Planning Commission. When I sat where Ruth Moore is and chaired the commission for 5 years, one of the responsibilities we had was to go over the codes and update some of the old codes to comply with some of the current things that are happening as far as parking and housing and some of the things. We just tried to move it out of the 50s and into the 2000s. And we did that. We did it well. And Mr. Moore was part of that. You remember that, Ken? One of the other things that the city is running into is, you guys will hear a lot more about this, is Goal 10. If you are unaware of what Goal 10 is, it's the city's requirement for housing as far as the state is concerned. The city of Amhill currently has an urban growth boundary, as do all cities in the state of Oregon. And once you start dwindling that urban growth boundary, per Goal 10, you're required to basically one in, you know, one out, one in. So if you develop 5 acres, you're supposed to kind of bring 5 acres in or have a plan to adjust urban growth boundaries to maintain those 20-year supplies. City of Amhill is about ready to run out of developable land within the urban growth boundary. Goal 10, it states it very clearly, if you guys all want to go read it on your own time, all cities are to require a 20-year supply of buildable land, along with multifamily, middle housing, and commercial. Okay, those are some requirements set by the state. Governor just put out, we need 36,000 housing units per year for the next 10 years. Yamhill is in a unique situation. Once that subdivision goes in, we're down to just a few little lots left, not 20-year supply. But it's not just Yamhill. It's Yamhill, Lafayette, Dayton, Amity, McMinnville, Forest Grove, North Plains. North Plains is going to bring in quite a bit of land. Scappoose. You can just go to Hubbard, Aurora, everybody's urban growth boundaries are maxed. Okay, so there's going to be a lot of emphasis on cities moving forward because there's no way the state of Oregon can provide 36,000 houses per year. That's one new house every day for 365 days. But without the land and the means to build these houses, you can't do it unless you go vertical or jam everybody into the Portland metro area. And that's, you know, tearing down houses. So why I'm here is to talk about, and when I was on the chair planning commission and I chaired it, I spent a lot of time trying to get our planning director or the person who worked for the city to focus on, we need to get the ball rolling on urban growth expansion. It just needs to happen. And I just want to bring it to the Planning Commission's attention that those are things that are going to be a kind of a priority focus. I mean, you can, as you said, you can, we need things. You need water, sewer, roads improvement, but you can't have any of that unless you have additional housing to help offset some of those costs. At the current matrix right now, the amount of houses that we have just won't sustain the city for years to come because you start getting farther and farther behind on the on the bills and not enough new housing or not enough new hookups to continue, you know. So anyways, I'm just here to talk about, as a planning commission, these are things I think are important to start discussing and maybe working with this planner and engineer moving forward with urban growth expansions, because it's not going to be just GM Hill. I've got over 25 years experience in planning, land development, engineering, and this type of stuff. And we've been talking about it for 20 years in my circles of planners, engineers. 20 years ago, we said, we don't do something, we're going to be out of land metro-wide. And that was in 2003. It's 2023, and we're there. So,
well, Chuck, you know, thank you. And you're serving basically an introduction for our speakers tonight, because we're on it. I mean, it's very timely. We have Melissa Ahrens and Kevin Young from the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development to kind of get this ball rolling again. And Walt, our planner, is here, and he's going to be guiding us through this. And
hey, Walt.
The city council has told us to do this. So they've set the budget for it. And this is the kind of the beginning of that restart right now. Right, tonight.
You're going to see me a lot.
Right.
I'm telling you, you guys are going to see me a lot.
Very good.
Well, and I will help
your help
all of you through this process, because it's not an easy process. I'm not sure why the gas station hasn't been approved yet. I'm not understanding that.
Come next week. Hey, come next month.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to have that probably before us.
Okay. And that's another topic.
Yeah.
But anyways, as far as housing is concerned, the inventory here in town is down to nothing.
We got it. Thank
and we can't expand sewer treatment plants. We can't upgrade water, any of those types of things. You can't borrow money, you know, unless you have a job. You can't put in infrastructure unless you have land to expand and be able to pay for those infrastructure improvements. The same thing.
Well, Melissa and Kevin are going to solve all this for us tonight. So glad they're here. All right.
Oh, Chuck. They're here.
Yeah, they're here tonight. They're speaking. Oh. They're our speakers. So hang around and you'll hear the.
Okay.
You'll hear it get going.
Mr. Moore, I know I've used almost all my time, but I would like to bring to this committee's attention one fallacy. I talked to the mayor in Lafayette, I talked to the mayor in Gaston, and I talked to the mayor in St. Paul. All those mayors agree that the money that is generated by new housing will never offset an infrastructure that is lacking for water and sewer. It is impossible. And right now we are faced with a $5 million, $6 million, $7 million hookup to another city just for water. Doesn't even address the fact that our ponds are already over the limit and we are about to bring 57 homes online. So with that said, I'll shut up. Thank you.
Yeah, I think maybe Melissa and Kevin know more about this than I do, but my experience has been that cities are kind of a Ponzi scheme in that you get land, you get development services charges, what are they called?
SDCs.
SDCs to help pay to maintain whatever you need, but it doesn't keep up. You can't, you have to keep growing to keep the Ponzi scheme going, to repave the streets you already got. And it's a tough game. We have to have smart people here. We have to be clever and we have to write lots of grants and we've got to. You really got to do the dance to keep up. So I get it.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right. Well, now it's time to swear in our new commissioner. And Shannon, you're going to do that?
Good. Okay. So raise your right hand. I, Sean
Freilinger,
swear that I will faithfully support the Constitution.
I, Sean Freilinger, swear that I will faithfully support the Constitution.
And laws of the United States of America.
And laws of the United States of America.
And of the state of Oregon.
And of the state of Oregon.
And the charter and ordinances.
And the charter and ordinances.
Of the city of Yamhill.
Of the city of Yamhill.
And I will perform the duties of planning commission member.
And I will perform the duties of planning commission member.
For the city of Yamhill.
For the city of Yamhill.
To the best of my ability, so long as I may continue in that capacity.
To the best of my ability, so long as I may continue in that capacity.
If you can sign that and then just give that back to me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, Sharon, would you conduct the election for a chair?
Sure.
It just seemed kind of funny that I did it.
Do I have any motions for a chair for the planning commissioner or planning commission? Sorry.
I motion to nominate Ken for chair.
Do I have a second for that?
Second.
Who was the second? And can I take a vote, please?
Richardson, aye.
Freilinger, aye.
Hodgkins, aye.
Moore, aye.
Okay, and the motion passes. So your new chairperson is Ken Moore.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And now the main event. So Melissa and Kevin, would you take it away?
Thanks, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, there's a little reverb on my end, but as long as it sounds fine for you, that's all that matters. We have a PowerPoint. I'm not seeing it on our Zoom screen. I'll just wait till that gets pulled up.
Oh. See.
Yeah. Perfect. Thanks so much for having us tonight. I'm going to give just a brief overview of DLCD and the statewide land use planning program, and then I'm going to turn it over to Kevin to get more in the weeds about UGBs and all of that fun stuff. So if you could go to the second slide, please. And I apologize if any of this is redundant. I'm just kind of starting with the basics. If any of you don't already know any of this, just to be sure we're looping you in. So sorry if any of it's redundant. Oregon's planning system dates back to the legislature's adoption of Senate Bill 100 in 1973. The system relies upon a partnership between state and local governments to promote coordinated and consistent administration of land uses based on local comprehensive plans adopted throughout the state. You can see the timeline on the screen there, major events. If you could go to the next slide, please. Oregon's Land Conservation and Development Commission, LCDC, assisted by DLCD, adopts state land use goals and implements rules, assures local plan compliance with the goals, coordinates state and local planning, and oversees the coastal zone management program, which you don't have to worry about. If you could go to the next slide, please. The seven commissioners are unpaid citizen volunteers appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The statute establishing the commission, ORS 187.030, requires the members be representative of certain regions of the state. You can go to the next slide, please. Oregon's primary land use policies are expressed in 19 statewide planning goals. Goals may be clustered into four groups. Goals one and two are the process goals of comprehensive planning. Goal one calls for widespread citizen involvement and effective two-way communication with citizens. Goal two requires local governments to have comprehensive land use plans and implementing regulations. Goals three through eight, 13 and 15 express natural resource conservation goals. Goals 9 through 12 and 14 are concerned with housing, transportation, urban growth, and economic development. So that includes the famous goal 10 mentioned earlier. The remaining goals 16 through 19 apply specifically to the unique resources of the Oregon coast. You can go to the next slide, please. Oregon's planning law requires local plans and regulations to be consistent with state law and the statewide planning goals, including applicable rules adopted by the Land Conservation and Development Commission, or LCDC. Land use planning in Oregon is intended to be tailored to meet the individual needs of unique communities throughout the state, with goal one, citizen involvement, being the cornerstone of the state land use planning program. And that's a very simplified relationship chart there, but gives you a basic understanding. If you could go to the next slide, please. So what is DLCD? DLCD implements the statewide planning program under the direction and guidance of LCDC. DLCD staff serve as partners to local governments, providing land use planning resources and support. As your regional representative, I'm available as a starting point of contact for any of your land use planning questions, a resource for technical assistant grant opportunities and housing grant opportunities. You can start with me for questions and then we can bring in the housing team as needed. Also your liaison to the regional solutions team. We work collaboratively on projects to address priorities and we aim to serve as quick responders to emerging issues. So the regional solutions team can be a great way to bring a project that has maybe some specific concerns or issues and conflicts and to kind of work through it and talk with multiple state agencies at once and get feedback in that forum. So it can be really useful. And I'm sure that you probably have heard about a lot of the new housing grant opportunities that are coming. We are going to keep all our local government partners in the loop on that going forward. So myself and Kevin can be a resource for that, and we will be sure to loop you in. And this type of meeting helps us kind of understand your needs better. So it's a great starting point. So we can hopefully help support you going forward. And with that, I will turn it over to Kevin, I think. You have the next slide.
Thank you, Melissa. My name is Kevin Young. I'm the senior urban planner for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And one of the things that I do is review urban growth boundary expansions. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about tonight. And I understand from prior conversations, there's concerns that there's a limited supply, especially of lands for housing in Yamhill. So this seems very timely. Also, just want to say hello to Walt. Walt used to work in Lebanon when I worked for City of Corvallis for 15 years. So it's nice to see a familiar face as well. And I know you're well represented by Walt in terms of planning knowledge. I know he's been doing this for a while.
Now, Kevin, please don't, because my head won't fit through the door. Right. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, you bet. So land, yeah, they're not making any more of it, except for the next slide. Yeah, so we're not in Dubai, so we are dealing with pretty much a finite resource in Oregon, and our program is kind of designed to be thoughtful about how we use land. Next slide, please. And that gets to statewide planning goal 14, which is concerned with urbanization and, you know, basically about how we transition from rural to urban lands in Oregon, planning for growth inside urban growth boundaries and preserving farm and forest lands and rural lands for other uses outside urban growth boundaries. So goal 14 is the rule that, or the goal that kind of provides direction as to how that transition occurs. It's kind of the crossroads where rural turns to urban. Next slide, please. So Oregon in 1973, as Melissa was saying, made an intentional decision to put in place a statewide planning program. I think basically, you know, the state charted a middle ground between a no growth policy and an unmanaged growth policy and said, instead, what we'd like to do is to manage that growth. We understand growth will occur, We have a system for allowing cities to grow over time and meet their land needs over time. And that's what I'm here to sort of explain to you today. Next slide, please. So our track record, recent track record on urban growth boundary adjustments in the last, oh gosh, I guess this is a 6-year period from 2016 through 2022. We've had cities file 38 comp plan amendments to adjust their urban growth boundaries. Of those, only 2 amendments were not approved. So of the 38, 36 were successful urban growth boundary adjustments. I know they are complicated. I'm not here to tell you that they're not complicated, but I'm here to say that by and large, if you follow the proper process, you're going to get approval. And this should move forward relatively predictably. So our track record, 95% approved, 83 of those were not appealed, and 80% of those applications were approved within 1 year of local adoption. So that's how we're doing on UGBs of late. Next slide, please. And the fundamental kind of premise or the way we think about urban growth boundaries is it really is about supply and demand. First of all, land supply, the lands within your urban growth boundary, and then matching that up to anticipated future demand. And so the process really kind of lays out both of those sides of the equation. And go ahead, next slide, please. There's a variety of rules that speak to how this is done. Goal 14, of course, is that urbanization goal. The statutes, ORS 197-298, and then 197A, sections 300 through 325, provide direction outside of Portland Metro. And then Division 24, or OAR 660-024, is the one that speaks to, it's the standard method for UGB expansions, urban growth boundary expansions. I do need to say that there is an alternative process. We refer to it as the simplified UGB process that was developed several years ago. The idea was to create a more sort of streamlined package or process for urban growth boundary expansions, but what it includes is a fairly formulaic approach. And unfortunately, I have to report that as of yet, no city has yet used the Division 38 process, the streamlined UGB process. I think as we've looked into that issue, I think it is many cities find it to be overly prescriptive. And so because of that, I'll largely be speaking to you tonight about the Division 24 process, because that is really the tried and true process that cities have used to expand their UGBs over the last 40 years, 40 plus years. Next slide, please. So how do you determine your demand? So generally we think of land needs for a community as 2 categories, residential land needs and employment land needs. For the Division 24 process, that's based on a 20-year population forecast. Or for the simplified UGB process, it's only a 14-year period. That's another reason why local governments haven't chosen the streamlined process, because it doesn't extend as long. So the Division 24 process spans a 20-year forecast into the future. And it looks at specific land needs, housing, employment, but also there's an ability to factor in the need for public facilities, schools, parkland, open space, or a combination of those categories. All right, next slide, please. And so to understand those needs, there are 3 types of studies that are generally used. The first on the residential land side, and it sounds like this is something that Yamhill needs pretty urgently, is what we call a housing capacity analysis. This is also known as a housing needs analysis. Same thing, you'll hear both terms, but a housing capacity analysis looks at your long-term population trends and then figures out how many housing units do we need. I'll go into more detail on that a little bit later. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a cough tonight. The economic opportunities analysis does the same thing, but on the employment side. So this is both your industrial or commercial land needs. So looking at population growth, looking at employment projections, figuring out what economic opportunities should be provided within Yamhill. And then lastly, the public facility studies. And this can be a variety of things. Could be a parks master plan, water or sewer plans, or even consulting with your local school district to see if there are additional school facilities that are needed. Also informs kind of the overall picture of land needs. I think it's important to note that when you're looking at UGB expansions, a local government can do one of these studies, can do all of these studies. There's no requirement that you have to look comprehensively at all of your land needs. Obviously, in a perfect world, you would do that, but it's sometimes hard to get all those resources and timing together. So it's perfectly okay for a local government to say, we're really interested, we're really concerned about housing, so we're going to do a housing capacity analysis, and then maybe down the road, update your economic opportunities analysis and so on. I'm going kind of quickly. If people have questions as I'm going, just feel free to raise your hand or just, let me know. But we'll have time for questions at the end as well. Next slide, please. All right, so this is kind of the framework for the housing side of the equation. And this is, again, following that Division 24 process. Begins with the projected population over the planning period. And that comes from the Oregon Population Forecast Program at Portland State University. So those numbers kind of provide your picture for growth over the next 20-year period. And then with those numbers, you're able then to look at your housing need. Typically, you're going to look at your persons per household numbers, usually from ACS or census data, to kind of convert population into dwelling units. You're going to look at your supply of buildable lands within your current urban growth boundary. What do we still have available? And then you're going to figure out a plan for accommodating that needed housing, whether that can be accommodated within the current urban growth boundary or whether there's a need to expand that urban growth boundary. Next slide, please. But between the identification of the need and the UGB expansion, there is a requirement in the rules prior to expanding the UGB to demonstrate that those needs cannot reasonably be accommodated on land that's already inside the UGB. you'll hear the term efficiency measures, and that's kind of what we talk about when we're using this concept, is that local governments would need to look at, are there ways that we can make more efficient use of the remaining residential lands in our urban growth boundary before we expand the boundary? And those things can be smaller minimum lot sizes, a greater variety of housing types, as you're seeing here with the missing middle illustration. Allowing higher densities, allowing more, say, mixed use zones where you might not have done that in the past. So there's a number of different efficiency measures that can be considered. We have a list of those that I'm happy to provide to you as you're kind of stepping through that. But that's a ways down the road after you've actually identified what your housing needs will be. Next slide, please. So once you are at the point where you've figured out your need, your land needs, you've figured out your efficiency measures, okay, here's some things that we can do to make more efficient use of our lands within the UGB. but still we have a land need that we cannot meet within our current urban growth boundary, that's when you know we're moving on to a UGB expansion. And this process is really divided into these four steps. So first of all, there's a study area requirement, and then there's a prioritization of lands within the study area. Then there's the application of suitability criteria, and then balancing locational factors to ultimately decide which lands make the most sense to be included within the urban growth boundary. And I'll step through each of these steps. Next slide, please. All right, so per the rules in Division 24, for smaller cities like Yamhill, the study area is basically extends 1/2 mile outside the current urban growth boundary. There is a requirement to add any contiguous exception areas within 1 mile. So those might be rural residential lands or other what are called exception areas under county jurisdiction that could be considered for inclusion. There are also some areas that can be excluded from preliminary study areas. So if you're looking for a specific industrial or public facility need with particular site characteristics, you can exclude lands that don't have those site characteristics. For areas that are impracticable to provide public services, you can exclude those. And that bar is actually a pretty high one. Impracticable to provide public services really means it's technically not feasible, which is a pretty high bar because a lot of areas are theoretically serviceable. It doesn't get into the cost of providing services. It's just, can they be provided with public services? Also, land subject to natural hazards, as you see in the picture here, lands that are obviously being flooded might be one category there. Specific scenic, natural, cultural resources, and any non-urban federal lands can be excluded from the study areas. Next slide, please. This is what this looks like. So City of Sandy did one of these a few years ago, and this is the study area that they put forward, the kind of the outer ring there. That gap between the inner ring and the outer ring is the study area. So the inner ring, of course, is the urban growth boundary. No, I'm sorry, I got that wrong. No, the urban growth boundary is the blue on this graphic. The study area is the inner line, and then the outer line is just that additional area that would include the exception land. So I'm sorry, I misspoke. So you're going out 1/2 mile and then another 1/2 mile to pick up those exception lands. But essentially you're looking at all of those lands within that circle around the city. So you would do that for Yamhill.
Okay,
next slide, please.
I just want to ask a question there before you move on. Where's
go right ahead.
Where's the center of that 1/2 mile? I kind of see it different distances from the edge of the blue.
Yeah, you know, I'm realizing that as I'm saying this because it's not a very good graphic. It should be precisely 1/2 mile from each of those edges. And this is not actually showing that. So I'm not actually sure why the mapping reflects that, because yeah, essentially if the blue were the urban growth boundary, then the 1/2 mile area would really mimic that shape precisely, but a half mile out. So I'm sorry, I apologize. It's not a great illustration here because it doesn't really show you what it should look like.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Any other questions while I'm at it?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, I think so.
Can I ask a question, just an audience member? If the land isn't relative, like you said, to expand out due to wetlands or steep slopes, can you readjust that urban growth boundary not to include that on that 1/2 mile extension?
Right. So There are certain categories of lands that can be excluded, and those with slopes over 25%, areas within 100-year floodplains can be excluded. There's some other categories as well. Yeah.
Well, I've seen maybe some pressures that are pushing that those two blue lines in down on the lower left, or there's some hills over there. I don't know. I see some contour lines up there on the upper right that maybe are pushing that boundary in.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And it may be that the larger study area would have been larger, but they've already excluded some areas from consideration in this graphic. I'm sorry, again, I apologize, because it's not really telling the story quite as accurately as I would have liked. But yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I think between my question and Chuck's, we kind of get an idea of when we start looking around the city limits, what we'll be looking at.
Sure. Next slide. Okay, so if there's another question, that's fine.
I misspoke. I didn't mean to say the city limits. Oh. I meant to say the urban growth boundary.
Okay, no worries. So once you've figured out that study area, the next step is prioritization of lands within the study area. What should come into the urban growth boundary first? What should be the last to come into the urban growth boundary? And this listing basically outlines those different categories. First to come in would be if you had established urban reserves. That's pretty straightforward. Rural exception lands and non-resource lands would be the first to come in to be included in an urban growth boundary. Marginal lands exist only in Lane and Washington counties, so they're they're not really relevant outside of those areas. Farm and forest land that is not primarily high-value farmland is the third category of lands that would come in. And the last kind of land that you want to bring in are the high-value farm and forest lands. So that's the way the system is designed, to preserve those high-quality resource lands, farm and forest lands, and bring in the other lands first. So that is what this graphic is showing you. The blue lands are the exception lands. So those would be the first to come in. We see the green lands are the resource lands. And this graphic doesn't actually split out high value from non-high value farmland. You would need to do that analysis ultimately to kind of figure out what makes the most sense to bring in. All right, next slide, please. All right, and then in the prioritization section of the rules, there is some ability to exclude certain lands from consideration if they're not suitable. So for industrial uses, if land is too parcelized or developed with other uses, it can be excluded from consideration. If the land could have been excluded in a prior analysis but was retained, that's fine. You can take it out at this point in the process. Natural resource protections under goal 5, that's our natural resource protection goal, will eliminate development capacity in those areas. If a site is too small or too steep for industrial uses, then it can be excluded. Land under conservation easements, land being utilized by public parks, schools, churches, cemeteries, airports, things that are not likely to get redeveloped or repurposed for other uses. All right, next slide, please. I think there's another slide. There we go. Okay. And then once you get to this point, you figured out your first priority lands to bring in, you've taken out those lands that can be excluded, then the local government gets to balance these locational factors. So there's some discretion here for the decide how to balance, you know, these considerations, making efficient accommodation of identified land needs, orderly and economic provision of public facilities and services, comparing like environmental, energy, economic, and social consequences, and lastly, compatibility of urban uses with nearby agricultural and forest activities. So all of that is something that the decision makers should consider when you make the decision on which lands to bring in the urban growth boundary. You really do need to make findings on all of these criteria. It is very important. Even though I say there's a lot of discretion, it's not. It shouldn't be a coin toss. You should have some good reasons for this area makes more sense than this area. Next slide, please. All right, so in terms of the process, so once you get to the finish line here, so you've done your analysis and you want to finalize that. So the UGB expansion is initiated by the city, but it must be approved by both city and county. So typically city's decision makers will make the decision for the city. I assume that's probably city council for Yamhill. And then that decision goes to the county, would go to Yamhill County for their decision. Both city and county need to agree on that UGB expansion in order for it to be valid. If it's a large UGB expansion, if it's more than 50 acres for a city greater than 2,500, then it must be approved by the Land Conservation and Development Commission in a more formal process. Yamhill is a small community and wouldn't be subject to this level of review. It's still reviewed, but it's reviewed like we review other land use decisions through the post-acknowledgement plan amendment process. All right, next slide, please. So following that final decision, city submits the notice of decision to us through the PAPA database is what we call it, the post-acknowledgement plan amendment database. For that formal process, the notice is provided to those who participated in that local process, and then there's a right to object within 21 days of submittal. However, I probably shouldn't have included this slide because, again, Yamhill is smaller. A smaller community wouldn't be subject to the review in the manner of periodic review. So you don't need to worry about this formal process. It would not apply to a UGB expansion in Yamhill. Next slide, please. Okay, and this is just kind of an overview of the process. So again, you could look at just residential needs. You could study residential, economic, and public land needs altogether. Once you can identify what those needs are over the planning period, the next 20-year period generally is how that works, then you can move into, are there efficiency measures? You'd move into evaluating your current urban growth boundary. Can it accommodate all these land needs? If not, consider efficiency measures. After you do that, then you're in a position to go through the UGB expansion process through that study area and prioritization process that I just outlined. So that's the how it works in a nutshell. I don't remember if I have another slide after this. Let's go ahead and go into the next slide. I guess that's it. So I think at this point, Melissa and I are happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Yeah, Kevin, do you have some familiarity with Yamhill and its urban growth boundary and needs and what's surrounding us?
I would say a little bit, but please, more information is always welcome. So, yeah. Well,
I think Chuck and I have, maybe Chuck more than I, but have a pretty good idea that this isn't going to be easy because, yeah, we've got a few little areas in town that'll, be part of that 20-year plan, but not much. And we're right up against high-value farmland.
That's by interpretation.
Okay. We're up against farmland and it's going to be tough to find things that make sense. Would you say, Chuck?
No.
Good. No. Glad to hear. Last time I talked to you, I thought it was, but.
No.
Okay. Never mind. It's going to be easy. Thank you.
I've spent a lot of time looking at this and identifying Yamhill and paying attention, having lived here for 30 plus years, graduating from high school here. Having been the mayor for 4 years, working on the water treatment plant, new water lines, upgrading the infrastructure system to be able to handle the growth that we've seen over the last 20 years. And with the growth, it's enabled Yam Hill to be able to do some more infrastructure upgrades with some of the revenue based on some of the houses that have come in. There's some lands that have been identified that could be for potential urban growth boundary expansions that meet the requirements of infrastructure, water, sewer, transportation, those types of things. So it's out there, it's available, but we are, as with many cities, as you probably well know, are running out of land to be able to build. When you look at the urban growth boundary maps that the state of Oregon provides on its website, everybody's right to the boundaries.
All right, so Walt, do you have something to add? You're familiar with our situation. What's your look at what the road ahead is going to look like?
Well, I think Kevin did an excellent job in outlining the challenges ahead. I'm also familiar with Lafayette, and they were able to take in some quality farmland because that's just the way the scenario developed in terms of what they could do. If you have a need, and there's no doubt Yamhill needs to have additional residential land, excuse me, my turn, needs additional residential land, my comment would be focus on the housing and look toward the UGB expansion addressing those housing needs. But I think, again, Kevin really laid it out. We know what the challenges are. I think it's just a matter of getting to work. And then, of course, if the DLCD has some extra money to throw our way, I would not be opposed to that. And Kevin's laughing.
No, I'm actually, and Melissa can back on this. In recent years, the legislature has been pretty generous in terms of supporting housing planning for local governments. And if the governor's budget is successful, there will be additional funds available. I can't make any promises as to how they're going to be allocated, but you know, that is definitely something to track. And I don't know, Melissa, if you wanted to add anything, but we do have regular technical assistance grant programs that you can apply for.
Yeah, the next biennium is opening up soon, and we will have a lot more information about grant opportunities and more to come on housing grants that are available. So I will make sure to keep the city in the loop, and I am following it closely. So.
Okay, I'd also like to take this time to thank Melissa for forwarding a bunch of information concerning prior interactions between the city and DLCD. Did not send back my thank you via email, so I thought I'd do it here. Thank you very much, Melissa.
Of course, happy to help anytime.
I'd kind of like to see what this process looks like on applying for these grants. And Sharon, and between you and Melissa, is she going to help you write grants? Who's going to write the grants? How does it get started? How do we kick this process off in getting those applications in that are effective?
Well, I believe that once the city's ready to move forward, then we can contact DLCD and see what's opening. I saw a few different grants that were listed on the website. Are any of them open right now?
We haven't opened, as far as I know, we haven't opened applications yet for the technical assistance grants. So I will make sure to let you know once that gets finalized. I think we're still looking at the prioritization and the plan for those. So I'll keep you in the loop. As soon as I hear anything, I will let you know. And then the housing grants, I'm not exactly sure on the timeline on that, but I will keep you updated when I know more. That's kind of an evolving area right now in the legislature. So
yeah,
stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm sorry to jump in, Melissa.
No, but please.
Yeah, I mean, we operate on a biennial budget. We're at the tail end of the 21-23 biennium here. So we're closing out things that we funded through the end of the biennium, which for us is June of 2020, 3, right? So we're getting towards that end. The legislative session will end right about that time, at which point we'll have a budget, and then we'll be ready to roll out for the 23-25 biennium, and we'll have a good idea of what funding is available.
Kevin, I have a question for you. You have a biennium budget, but you make awards annually, correct?
You know, I'm sorry. I am less expert in the TA part of stuff. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure how those funds are allocated, Walt. But we can get, if you have a question, we can get back to you with an answer. So go ahead.
Okay. My thought was just maybe the city applies for housing needs the first year and then applies for a technical grant the second year to go through UGB expansion. I mean, some sort of logical way of getting this done. Just a thought.
As soon as we have a better idea on the timeline of when the applications are going to open for the technical assistance, that might help inform your decision-making too. So we'll know in the next couple months, I would think, if not sooner.
Thank you.
And Melissa, Yamhill is on your short list of people to keep track of and be in contact with. And Sharon is your contact here.
That's correct, although I've been communicating with Walt, but I'm happy to kind of include both of them in any communication if that's preferred. Just let me know what you think is best.
Boy, I'm not in a position to answer that. I'm trying to understand the process so that we kind of have a closed loop here. Who actually writes the grants, Sharon?
I've been doing that.
You've been doing it? Okay.
Because of the lack of staff, the ability to be able to really research and write grants has been kind of limited. It looks like we should be adding another staff member soon. And so once we get that new staff member, then the city will decide, you know, who's doing what in the administration department. So there will, from what I understand, there will be someone. I'm not sure if it's going to be me. If it's me, that's great. If not, you know, I can let you know who it'll be.
Our staff can provide a lot of support too. We have grant team staff at DLCD, and I'm happy to support with the grant application materials. The city wouldn't just be alone kind of trying to figure it out. We would be with you, supporting you to figure it out. Yep.
Right. That's really helpful. Thank you. So sorry, I didn't really answer your question.
No, I'm feeling more comfortable that these aren't people that we'll just see once because, you know, they fly over and we see their face, but they're really connected with us. Oh, great.
Most definitely.
So next, what's the next step? Now, it sounded like wait for the budget.
Go ahead, Walt.
Yeah, I think that's the logical way right now. They basically gave you an outline of how the process works. I don't think they can provide too much info at this point until they know about their budget. So I think we have a couple of months to play with before we really start digging into them.
So, you know, with city council approval, so city council needs to get the information they need to be able to know what they're saying when, yes, we approve this. And I guess that means commitment of resources. So ahead of a grant, there's not a lot of resources to commit to this process. This is not cheap, right?
Kevin, what is the local match for some of these things?
You know, I think we really, for an HNA or housing capacity analysis, we will, you know, what we've been doing recently is either we'll have a team of consultants that can do that work, and we'll assign that person to the city if you're successful, or we also can provide those funds through grant dollars that then would allow the city to hire a consultant to do that work. Some smaller cities in particular prefer to have us handle the contract management because that takes time and staffing and all that, but it's really up to you. But in terms of local match, it's really for that work is really showing up at the meetings, providing the consultant with the data they need, and just being engaged in the process. There isn't it's really just your time. There's not a dollar amount.
And that's Walt's time. Walt is showing up at the meeting. Is that right?
And well, planning commission.
Yeah.
And the public. At this juncture, this is something that we probably need to coordinate with the city council to make sure everyone is on the same page here in terms of what we should pursue, when and how. Just a thought.
And you'll do that with the city council, Walt? Or is that
Sharon will probably lead the charge on that one. I will coordinate with Sharon.
Sounds good.
Great. Yeah, Chuck.
Real quick, I think our local engineering service, AKS Engineering here out of Sherwood. I'm sure you guys are Kevin and Melissa are very aware of AKS Engineering. They probably could have the analysis that you're looking for fairly quickly, considering they've mapped this entire city and done the water and sewer, and you know they know it fairly well. And Alex and Monty Hurley live right up the street, who own AKS Engineering, so they're very aware of this community. So I think with a little bit of resources through our engineering firm, they could provide those details that you guys will need.
We would need to have the budgeted funds for that.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that through a grant or something to our local engineer, they can provide some of that.
And looking back on my notes, because I went through and did section for planning for our work session that we had a few weeks ago. Technical assistant grants for update to comprehensive plan, local land use ordinances or other planning compliance projects. No match required, but recommended. So that, does that sound right, Kevin and Melissa? That's what I pulled off of your website. Okay, good.
Yes.
Any questions?
New guys are just trying to figure it out.
Well, we're in kind of a unique time, just waiting to get more information about the next biennium. So I hate to say we'll get back to you, but we will have to kind of get back to you, getting more in the weeds with kind of a plan for the city to help support you going forward and give you some better direction.
Well, I've been attending the city council meetings, and last two times I was there, this has come up and they've been saying, yes, do this, go ahead. And I said, it's going to cost money, right? And they go, yes, do it. Now they need to have a more specific plan, I guess, but they're certainly behind this process. The city council is.
And I know that they're in the works of preparing the budget that would start in July. So I can ask and make sure, I did provide a section for planning, economic development, all different kinds of things, showing different grants. And so I can just check in with them and see if that's, you know, still the plan and if they're putting it in the budget.
Well, this sounds like good timing as far as the state budget and the city budget goes. So I think we're in a good position right now. Unless there's anything more, Kevin, Melissa, thanks for being here. On, let's see the agenda. We're pretty much done. Yeah, Sharon.
Yep, just the next meeting, and then if these are not any comments or discussions.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your evening.
Thank you.
We'll stay in touch.
Yep, sounds good. Will do. Bye.
So next meeting, March 15th. Same, 7 o'clock. And we'll have the gas station application, it sounds like. Officer Graven.
I'll check with him.
Okay.
And just let him know that we'll be having a public hearing. So see if he wants to do that, or maybe he would want a different meeting in between to discuss with you guys, but I'll check in with him.
Right. And he wanted to talk to us about the historic district. Can you flesh that out a little bit for me?
If I can find that.
Yeah, presentation. He's now this temporary interim city administrator.
Who is it?
Chief Graven is operating as the interim city administrator.
And it was embarrassing how in love the city council is with him as the city administrator. They were just like hugging each other and crying a week ago at city council meeting. They're so happy with what he's doing.
So here's the project initiation sheet. Hopefully I'm not.
Isn't there a meet and greet tomorrow?
Those are for the finalist, for the person who'd be taking the permanent position. Chief Graven's just filling in the interim. Yeah. So this is his staff report. So it was the city of Yamhill, Oregon as a designated historic district. The description is designating the Yamhill Planning Commission oversight to establish the city of Yamhill as a historic district with city council approval, authorizing the city of Yamhill Planning Commission to be appointed authority to conduct research on the city of Yamhill, Oregon as a designated historic district. So that's what he will be talking to you guys about. And I did have, let me see if I can find this.
Chairman Moore,
just want to say.
Let's see if I can find this. Oregon Main Street Revitalization Grant, you've got a 30% matching funds award, is up to 200,000. Diamonds in the Rough Grant, one-to-one match, awards up to 200,000. Let's see if there's a story.
So you've gone right to money because this conduct research is what costs money.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was about.
And is the city council behind this? And is that also in the budget you're putting together?
They did approve this project initiation as presented at the last city council meeting.
Right.
So they approved it by consensus vote. So I believe they want to move forward. If you'd like, I can send you a copy of this. It was presented in the last city council meeting, so you can review. And then I'll coordinate with Chief Graven to see when he wants to meet with you guys and let you know.
Okay, so this has been approved. This is going forward, and we are now somehow going to be the authority to conduct this research.
Yeah.
Authorizing the City of Yamhill Planning Commission to be appointed, authority to conduct research.
As a designated historic district.
A little ambiguous wording, but okay.
It's currently on the National Register of Historic Places.
The city actually is?
That's what he's saying here. He said the city of Yamhill, Oregon is currently on the National Register of Historic Places, including the John Marion Bunn House, a turreted Victorian house in which Beverly Cleary spent the first 6 years of her life in the city of Yamhill, Oregon. The Lee Laughlin House, a Victorian home, which was the residence of Lee Laughlin, located in the city of Yamhill, Oregon. So he's saying establishing a historic district enables the preservation of historic building, playing an important role geographically or thematically.
define the area. This property owners are not required to make changes to their properties or restore buildings to their historic appearance. Rather, the historic review process applies only when a property owner initiates a construction project that requires a certificate of appropriateness. So I think this is a few pages long, so I can go ahead and.
Is this research to determine what we need to do to become historic district, or is it research just to manage?
Well, you're involved in that.
I have the answer if somebody wants to let me speak.
All right, go for it, brother.
So what Chief Graven is trying to do is to get Planning Commission to do the nuts and the bolts with regard to the city's ordinances, with regard to what can and cannot be built within the city. Not to establish the city as historical, which is what YNA is doing, which is in conjunction with this, but it's different. He's looking for this, for the Planning Commission to develop the laws and requirements, land use permits and whatever, to maintain the historical purview of the city of Yamhill. That's what he's looking for you guys to do by saying this, from what I understand.
Did he tell you that directly, Robert?
Well, that's what I understood when I asked him off the cuff.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like within this document that that's his thing. But like I said, I'll go ahead and read that document.
Well, we don't know, but we'll learn. Chuck?
So when we were going through all those changes, remember we did all that stuff, and one of the things that we addressed within city ordinances was architectural standards, and those are what this gentleman here is talking about, what Chief Graves is talking about, and what you guys will be is what we tried to do back then was some cities with a historical district similar to Sisters have instituted an architectural standard within the city's building codes with the downtown district. We need to sharpen that up. One of the things, I guess, you know, we got a gas station coming here. Do we want that to look like, you know, every gas station in the metro area, or do we want that to have a flavor of the historic downtown, kind of more of the westerny late 1800s, early 1900s style and look? I don't know that we have that established within our city code, but that is something that we're looking at back when I was chairing the Planning Commission, and I don't know that we ever adopted that. We need to look at that code, and we may have made some adjustments as far as reviewing architectural designs, and I think we put some verbiage in there that should match existing buildings, some brick, board and bat, kind of like what the Zippy's building did. I think we put that in there. I can't remember, but yeah, it needs to be reviewed. But we need to maybe sharpen that architectural standard up a little bit more based on the historical data that Chief Graving is pulling up for us. And that will establish a specific type of look for this community.
We did create the downtown overlay.
Right.
And that's part of why the gas station is having a hard time, is because they're not wanting setbacks. That what we wrote said zero setback from the street.
Right.
So that's the issue of the gas station right now. It's hard for a gas station to have zero setback. That's the issue. Now, I'm seeing a little bit difference in that, what the buildings look like that aren't historic buildings, and what this thing will do in how people will be able to do and not do to their historic house. That seems like a whole nother set of rules and regulations. That's
based on that house in the.
Yeah, they're both in my family.
Yeah.
And cool. And they're the only historical things in this town that are right. Designated.
Well, I think this, when something's designated, then maybe it's up to create our ordinances around what can and can't be done and how it will be approved in the certificate of appropriateness. I'm talking about something I really don't know much about, but I think it's going to be around those houses that are designated, what can and can't happen to them, independent of what we want the rest of the downtown to look like.
Right.
Those are different animals.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So we'll learn.
But I kind of gathered from what you said, though, that you, if those two houses are kind of anchor points of historic aspect of the town, that might set a generation or style of home or building in town that we want the downtown to kind of match what that is, so that if there's a consistency with those historic places.
Yeah, the architectural rest, style, right. And period architectural style is what we're looking for. And I'm thinking we put something
that,
in
that language is in the downtown overlay.
What's that? The as far as matching?
Yes.
Okay. So we established that when we readjusted that.
That's right.
Code, you know, 5 years ago.
And the setbacks is probably one of those.
That's just normal. Yes, that's normal. That's not
zero setback. If you can build right up to the sidewalk.
Right. You have to build to the sidewalk. That's what downtowns look like: store, not and gas station and drive-through. That's not a downtown. So that's why we did that, to keep it downtown looking.
Right.
So you can't do a Burger King or.
What?
Right. The way we ruled last time when they gave us our application was no, because of setbacks.
Chairman Moore, I have one other comment. Suggestion, if you would. I would suggest that this committee kick up to the city council an urban growth boundary request for funding and procedures to move that direction.
Yeah, that's what this whole conversation with Sharon was about.
Don't you have to make a motion to submit that to the city?
I don't know that needs to take place at this meeting, maybe at the next one, but.
Usually, I believe in what Ken had mentioned, Chair Moore had said earlier, was that it was coming from city council. So I don't know that it has to come back from the planning commission.
Yeah.
But we can always check with.
Yeah, they kind of sent us. They sent us the memo and said, "Do this."
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, see, there was one more piece. Oh, ordinances that get developed usually are written by Walt, and he looks around at other cities, what's been done, like he did with the sign ordinance, and we bring them in, and there's testimony, and there's discussion by people. You know, we're the citizens, we're representing the citizens. And then we say, well, what about this? And this doesn't quite fit us. And we change and we massage them. And finally, we vote and we agree with them. So he has the technical expertise about what's worked, what hasn't worked, what's normal. And so we don't have to get a degree in city planning. We just kind of say, does this match us? And is this what we're hearing from our citizens? That's our job. And does it meet the code, the ordinances?
So 24 years ago, when I sat up there as mayor, one of the things we needed was a new water treatment plant, because the one we had went belly up and we had a boiled water notice. And so what we sat down as a city council, we discussed for the next 20 years. We were looking 20 years out, because back then the town was 750 people. We didn't have all these subdivisions, but we knew that that was going to happen over the course of 20 years. Well, we're there. We're over the course of 26 years, we've, you know, added 150 houses to the community. You folks here are now on the hook for planning for the next 20-30 years. I won't be here, but you folks are here on the hook for the future of what this town's going to look like 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now. And that's what your responsibility here as a planning commission is. And with the governor coming up and saying, we need a lot of housing and a lot of urban growth boundaries tight. We can't hit that housing need until some of these, and that's why this VLCD, that's why they're having these meetings. It's not just Jam Hill. I mean, these guys are every week at somebody in other cities talking about the exact same thing. Because somebody has sent a memo
And typically how that does is the city of Yamhill rolls up to Yamhill County. Yamhill County has a map that says, hey, we're running out of land here, or state of Oregon. They roll that up to these guys, and these guys go, oh boy, you know, panic. Because if you think, you know, the homeless problem is bad now, it's going to get a lot worse if we don't continue to build housing.
So what Chuck says is about, it's our job to look into the future and try to see what Yamhill is going to look like. To make that a little more practical terms, that Senate Bill 100 and under the Section 24 that he was talking about requires that we always have 20 years, a 20-year projected for our population growth, that we've got enough land to grow that for 20 years. So that's our job, is to get enough land that by projections, we'll have enough room to grow for 20 years. Now, what we can't do is determine what businesses we want and don't want. That's not our job. If somebody comes with a permit and it meets the criteria, we have to approve it whether we don't like it, or not.
Right.
So we're not really shaping everything here. We're going by criteria, but this is a chance when we really do. It's not going to be like we're going to make a whole lot of decisions. The places that we can grow into are going to be pretty evident and least painful. It's not like we're going to be debating on this farm, not that farm. I think the reason the criteria is going to be, can we just get a little bit more to get that 20 years somewhere? And we'll be just digging out enough.
And he identified earlier on that map, there's two boundaries. There's the urban growth boundary, and then there's an urban reserve boundary. The urban growth boundary is the one we want to establish, so the city's going to establish first. The urban reserve boundary is a boundary that goes beyond that urban growth boundary that is identified, that once you start taking land down within the urban growth boundary, at some point you've already recognized the urban reserve, and Hillsborough's experienced that, Beaverton's kind of experienced a little bit of that, and some of these, the big metro urban growth boundary, they've identified urban reserves 20 years ago. Well, once they start growing, all of a sudden it's easy to bring that in because it's already been identified.
It's easy to bring it in, but it's not as easy to identify it. We have none.
We have none.
Because it's not easy.
But in this, I think as we begin this process, the city will identify an urban growth boundary and will also identify an urban reserve.
We'll see how that goes. We're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be,
I think it's part of the matrix of the DCL, you know, this group here, to have both of them. Because the last thing that they want is, you know, in 5 years, you burn it all up, we got to redo this again.
Yeah.
They want planning for.
Yeah. Now, one dynamic we haven't talked about is in Yamhill, there's Friends of Yamhill County. And they are people that are really protective of farmland. So they will be really looking over our shoulder to make sure we are doing everything the law requires to do that. That's what Senate Bill 100 is about. It's land conservation first and then development. I mean, I think they put that in the order on purpose. So those are the people that often, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, a subchapter here locally is Friends of Yamhill County. Those are the people that do the appeals.
They're the roadblock.
They're the roadblocks. So they're going to be making sure that we are dotting our I's and crossing our T's and doing the most we can to protect farmland. It's an adversarial system, you know, like our jurisprudence. It's, you know, there's push and pull, and you find a place where you can both say, all right, fine.
How does the infrastructure discussion play into that? Because obviously we have some issues there.
Yeah, we need to look into the water master plan, I would think.
And the sewer plan and all that seems like, how much is that a part of that discussion that we're going to have?
It becomes part of typically the infrastructure will be taken up by the city council, because they're the ones who...
Did we make recommendations to them?
We can. Things of it, you know, they're constantly identifying ways to bring in raw water. You know, we need, you know, one of the thoughts is we need additional raw water. How do we do that? because we have a creek right now that supplies water to our water treatment plant. Do we take a pipe from this water treatment plant 3 miles up to our reservoir and just suck right out of the reservoir that's up there? And then that way we don't have to pull it out of the creek. We got a constant stream. That's a $2 million hit. You know, who pays for that?
I think though, another perspective I have is that water is independent of urban growth boundary.
You're right. Urban growth boundary will take place, and it's up to the city to determine the infrastructure and how to provide it. But whatever the current urban growth boundary is, the city must provide water, sewer, as a because we've already identified that when the water treatment plant that we built, we took the whole urban growth boundary, even though there wasn't these subdivisions, and we calculated the amount of houses that could be built on a, you know, five houses per acre based on what we had available, plus the houses that we had, plus all the exterior water districts that we had. We had to calculate all that information. We came up with a matrix and we sized the water treatment plant according to not only the current capacity and the current outside water districts, but the infill of lots based on what we had available. Well, we're about ready to. So the water treatment plant has been designed over 23 years ago to meet the current urban growth boundary. Okay. It can produce that much water. Do we need to upgrade some things? Absolutely. I think the sewer treatment plant too was designed based on the current urban growth boundary and the matrix that was done back then. So once we start hitting to those capacities, probably another fourth lagoon will need to be added. Because we have three now, you would just add another lagoon to, you know, create the process of the filtration.
If you want to understand where the state of Oregon comes into all this for water, the News Register published three articles last Friday in the News Register that outlined how drastic and how needful the state of Oregon and many other states across the United States are needing water and don't have the ability to find water, get water, make water. I mean, it's three individual articles in the News Register. It was very informative. It was a dry read, but it was still informative. And one of the topics that they covered was for land use and development, water and sewer has never been a part of it.
And that's by design. We get the
yes.
We get the land and then we debate all the water afterwards.
Right.
That's kind of how it goes.
All right. I think we're done for tonight. I may have a conflict on March 15th. I don't know how that's gonna play out.
Did you want to discuss with the planning commission on the schedule for a different time?
If we could go,
jeez, my wife scheduled an airplane flight to Los Angeles to visit. If she can, she's going to be
cancel it.
That's she's going to be mad. It wasn't on my calendar. Oh boy.
Did you want to, so it looks like you've got the 22nd and the 29th, they're both Wednesdays
and in like
March.
You
did you want to?
The 22nd's fine. You know, I'd like to be here for that gas station.
That would be good.
Turn it over to people that may not be as really ready to brawl.
Would the planning commission be able to move the meeting from the March 15th to March 22nd? Any conflicts from anyone?
Well, that'd be great.
I've got nothing.
I apologize.
John's
thank you.
Okay. Ken's okay.
Yeah. He's checking.
It works for me.
Okay, Sean's good. How about Sue?
Yeah, I can do the 22nd.
Okay, so do you want to just announce that we're moving the meeting
from the 15th to the 15th? We're moving the meeting to March 22nd at 7 o'clock. Okay. Next Plan Commission meeting.
Need to make sure Walt's available.
Yeah, I will. He's off, so I will send him an email. Thank you for the reminder. He will be an important part of that meeting.
Is there an existing plan of the gas station now that he's proposing?
You can probably get a copy from Sharon.
They're still processing the application, so I don't think we can release records until it's completely processed.
So will it be, we'll have plans for it when at the meeting. And maybe, usually you send documents out a few days before.
Usually a week before the meeting is what I shoot for.
Do you post that on the website?
In the planning packet.
And the public can see that?
Yes.
How do you think you could post it before that, just a few days before, or you could post it when it's ready on the website?
I have to wait for Walt to do his review and provide me with a report. So once he has that available, I can put everything together.
And he doesn't do that a whole lot of time before the meeting. He kind of waits a few days.
Sometimes it's just a week before the meeting.
Okay.
I can ask him.
So that's your constraints on seeing the plans.
Yeah, I'm just curious what he's trying to build and how it meets with the city's ordinances to the downtown.
Yeah, I don't know how they've changed it. But last time, you know, there's the corner, they've got pumps in a building. And that's a long way from the sidewalk. So what they're going to do, I don't know.
And that was that. That's what we established years ago.
The downtown overlay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Due diligence.